Our reading this morning is by Ada Limón. It's called Instructions on Not Giving Up. More than the fuchsia funnels breaking out of the crabapple tree, more than the neighbor's almost obscene display of cherry limbs shoving their cotton candy-colored blossoms to the slate sky of spring rains, it's the greening of the trees that really gets me. When all the shock of white and taffy, the world's baubles and trinkets, leave the pavement strewn with the confetti of aftermath, the leaves come. Patient, plodding, a green skin growing over whatever winter did to us. A return to the strange idea of continuous living, despite the mess of us, the hurt, the empty. Fine then, I'll take it, the tree seems to say, a slick new leaf unfurling like a fist to an open palm. I'll take it all. So you know it's going to be some kind of evening when you sit down at your computer and start typing the search term, glow sticks, toxic for cats? That's the kind of night my family had a few summers ago. It was first 4th of July after a number without any fireworks and during the pandemic. And so we'd left the festivities with these red, white, and blue glow sticks, and we had been playing with our cat with them, and there had been an unforeseen rupture in the glow sticks. It was probably caused in part by me putting them in the freezer because I'd read that like you could like make them last longer by putting them into the freezer and that would extend the glowing. But now our cat was foaming at the mouth and my oldest son, who was 10 at the time, was very worried that he had accidentally poisoned her. Happily, this was not the case. We pulled up a website full of reassuring information that although the substance inside glow sticks is very bitter, it is not usually toxic. The site also had advice, good advice, for what to do next. That foaming reaction from the cat was because they don't have a way to spit out things that taste bad. So foaming was kind of getting rid of that very bitter taste. And as recommended, we gave her some water and a little bit of milk and some of her favorite treats, which could help her get the taste out of her mouth. And then the site recommended something that I would not have thought of, which is that after you had done this, you were supposed to take your animal into a dark room to see if she was still glowing anywhere. Now, I would never have thought of this. That was definitely the voice of experience, and I'm here to tell you that indeed, when we took our cat back into the bathroom, there was still a little bit of glowing blue on her, which was only visible in the total darkness. So after that, we were able to get her totally cleaned up, and we had a renewed appreciation for the internet and how quickly all of this information had been available. Now I know, and now you know, in case you ever have a glow stick cat situation. But it did make me wonder, where did I go for good advice before the internet, before Google, before a search engine was my first line in order to get my information? Now, again, I do remember a time before Google when I would consult with friends and colleagues about perplexing situations. Indeed, I still do. And we do have the poison control hotline up on our fridge. In this situation, I could have called our vet, and I could have called my mom. She has cats. She would have picked up, even if it was very late in her time zone. So practically speaking, these are my sources of good advice, and maybe they're similar to yours. A community of folks I trust, an outside or independent authority with some expertise, and my mom, who is some of both. Plus, she's really likely to pick up the phone when she sees my name come up. She's very available and responsive. And in the case of the glowing cat, it was easy to take good advice. We were already in a bit of a pickle. But I did reach out to some of you in this community and a couple of people in my community outside of this one over the past few weeks, and I can see that you were really giving more general advice, really not as specific as the glowing cat. For example, one of you explained that advice that's really helped you is to remember to mind your own business, even though that's hard for you. You gave me a little context for this by saying that people really need to help themselves instead of being saved, and that you have a tendency to try to save people. And this reminded me that sometimes it's not only the advice that I'm after, it is the story behind the advice. How did you come to appreciate these words in your life? Who helped you see that? For example, on this theme of how we learn to take responsibility for our own lives, how we learn to not save people who can save themselves, I immediately thought of a friend who had come to me recently appearing to ask for advice. And indeed, when she texted me, I wrote back right away, a very long, very wise text, very carefully considered, and very loyal to her dilemma, before remembering this bit of advice and how it was kind of reminded me of something that a coach that I'd worked with many years ago had said to me. Before he would answer my questions in our sessions, he would say, "Well, what's your instinct, Rebecca? What's your instinct?" So I deleted my long, beautiful text to my friend, and I asked her this question. And then I got to hear from her a very long and beautiful text about how she was going to listen to herself in this instance. Because I had reminded her that sometimes we're already aware of what we need to do, but we just need a little help, a little support to find our way. So I appreciate you for sharing this advice, even without the full story. It's more helpful, I think, than what I just elaborately explained to you about that cat glow stick situation, which is a very, very specific situation. And I also realized that the glow stick cat advice was unsolicited by any of you here. But good advice is almost always requested. It's solicited. In fact, when very well-meaning members of my community and my family reach out with advice when I have not asked them for advice, it just doesn't go that well. It's just a thing. Yeah, no matter how good the advice is, how hard one it has been in their experience, I usually don't have ears to hear it. Have you been there? This is one of my favorite aspects of Mr. Plumbean's story, the way that the neighbors assume that Mr. Plumbean really wants to follow their vision for his life. My first favorite thing is all of the ways they describe how crazy he is, that he's popped his cork and flipped his wig and blown his stack and dropped his stopper and gushed his mush and lost his marbles and slipped his hawser. I feel like maybe they know my neighbors, my neighborhood. Pretty fun to read, but my other favorite part is that even so, even when they have this opinion of Mr. Plumbean, that they decide that the way they're going to solve their problem is to go and talk to their neighbor. This is clearly a pre-next-door situation. And so one by one, they do. They go and talk to Mr. Plumbean, and he listens to them, and they just spend their time talking and listening. It made me wonder about any time that I've had a chance to talk and listen to my neighbors and to share my dreams. I wonder if there's been a moment of time in your life when someone handed you some lemonade amidst the frangipani and the baobab and listened as you accessed your own wisdom about changing your life for the better. When I think about the power of good advice, the advice we really take, I wonder about that hammock and the flowers and the paintings. What an ecosystem of creativity and hospitality and acceptance. The kind of open-heartedness and trust and neighborly kindness in which change really does take root. Another one of you spoke with me recently about what it's been like for you to get old. And I got to practice my listening, which was really wonderful, although I'm sorry I wasn't able to offer you lemonade or a hammock. You probably couldn't have gotten out of it again anyway. I listened to what it sounded like for you so far, what it's been like, and it sounded like aging was something that you didn't really expect to happen. Not this way, not with the uncertainties and the troubles that you've had, and the pandemic, too. And yet I heard you laughing as you talked about it. Like the surprise of it was tempered by the acceptance that you're learning to practice. And since you didn't know I was going to use this in the service, I'm not going to share your name, but you ended up telling me that no matter what your many, many years of education and schooling had taught you or tried to teach you about getting old, it was no use because in the end, it was a lesson that you had to learn the hard way. It was a lesson you had to learn the hard way. I wonder, no matter how well-intentioned we are when we give our good advice, there may be some things that cannot be taught ahead of time that we all have to learn through experience. Why do we call that the hard way, after all? I have to tell you, many years ago, when I was at university, rounding the corner to my senior year, I was driving home with my mom, probably home from the airport, watching that river of lights of traffic before us, and I was talking through an important decision that I needed to make. And I wanted her advice. I asked for her advice. I wanted to know what the right thing was to do. But now I don't remember anything she said. I remember talking to her along in the darkness. And I remember just really feeling that she trusted me to make a good choice. In fact, she was kind of advancing me the trust that I did not have in myself. Now, she hadn't been to seminary. She hadn't taken a chaplaincy course. But she was able to hold space in the dark so that I could see my way clear. What a gift. All these years later, I'm still learning how to trust myself in the dark. Because, of course, I want to make good decisions. And I want to practice what it feels like to listen within, to trust my instincts, and also to offer that space of deep listening to others. It's truly joyful to practice laughing with surprise at what it is you can't learn in school, what you have to learn by living, what you get to learn by living and listening. All the ways that it's helped me learn how I can say my life is me, and I am it. My life is where I want to be, and it looks like all my dreams. Sometimes this is harder than others. Some of you may have seen a story in the LA Times this week about the lessons that Carmel Netta learned from his mom, Adrian, who was killed by Hamas militants in Israel on October 7th. Did anyone all see the story? Oh, good, because I'm going to give it all to you here now. It was reported by Kate Linthicum at the LA Times, and most of what I'm going to say now is all paraphrased from her article. Carmel was on the phone with his mother and two of his siblings during the attack, and the last time he heard his mother's voice was when she addressed the attackers in Arabic right before the call cut out. Adrian had grown up in California, for she had fallen in love with an Israeli citizen whom she followed back to Biri, where they lived on a secular kibbutz that is older than the nation of Israel. She had learned Arabic as a midwife. She was working with mothers and families at a hospital in the Negev desert. And she raised her children to see the full humanity of their Palestinian and Bedouin neighbors. She was supportive of her son's decision to move from Biri to Haifa, where he and his wife could raise their children alongside Palestinian children, which they couldn't do on the kibbutz in Biri because of the fencing separating the families. In Haifa, Carmel's children attend Hand in Hand, which is an experimental bilingual school where classes are taught by Palestinian and Israeli teachers, both teachers in every class, and they teach in Arabic and in Hebrew. This is so that all of the parents who have children in the school will be able to build a new community where they can come together across their differences, where they can listen to one another, where they can share their dreams for a future without violence. The school was founded in 1998, and it has been for many years just this place, a place where Israelis and Palestinians are raising their children together, where they're connecting as parents, where they ask questions like, what is it like to parent kids right now? And that's how the community brought them together in the days and weeks and months that have followed those horrible October 7th attacks. As the state of Israel has declared war on Hamas and begun a horrible and devastating campaign that has destroyed tens of thousands of lives, that has laid waste to Gaza and its cities and hospitals and schools and roads. An escalation of war and violence in this troubled region that has continued in so many ways and for so long. It's the same violence that students across the U.S. are protesting on campuses today. So what is it like to parent kids right now? After Adrian, Carmel's mom, was killed and Kibbutz Be'eri destroyed in October, Carmel mourned not only his mother's death, but also the death and destruction of the war and the suffering it had brought to his neighbors, to so many parents and children. Many families in his school reached out to him to show their support and grief for his family, and the Palestinian families in particular wanted to show how much they cared, but they didn't know if Carmel would accept their presence at the Shiva, the service of mourning for his mother. They said, if there is even one person who does not want us there, we will not come. But Carmel said, of course, you must come. He said, my mother dedicated her life to bringing life into this world and seeing people as equals. Everyone is welcome here. Adrian had lived her life seeing the full humanity of her Israeli neighbors and her Palestinian neighbors, and her son learned this lesson so well that even unspeakable tragedy and violence could not make him unlearn it. Maybe he didn't know this until he experienced it, that he would still believe in a pathway to peace even after his mother's killing, and that he would be building that path with his life. Today, Carmel Netta is teaching us a lesson that he has learned the hardest way, by living it. And he is joined by hundreds of thousands of people in Israel, in Palestine, in this country, and around the world who will not give up on peace, who will not give up on the full humanity of Israelis and Palestinians, and who know that it is not always the advice that we give that matters. It is truly the lives that we live. Is it okay if we come to the service? Is it okay to grieve together in the midst of this destruction? Yes, of course. Everyone is welcome here. Yes, of course. It is okay to join hand in hand to embody the world we dream about, even now, even today. That is how we begin to live in that world, where our neighbors make important decisions, and they do so with the support and care they need to hold on to the dreams we all share, that risk of building the world that we're dreaming about. I started this service hoping I could offer you some good advice. But it turns out it's not only advice that we need. It's the courage to live in the hard ways, to trust our own voices in the dark, and to listen across very hard differences. It's the reassurance that when we do this, our actions, large or small, matter, and our voices are important. And it's a reminder that you're welcome at this service, that I want love and care and flourishing for you and for all of us on the university campuses, in the police departments, the humanitarian aid workers on the ground, in all the places of conflict around the world, for they are all part of the widest possible circle of our cares and our concerns. The poet tells us, when all the shock of white and taffy, the world's baubles and trinkets leave the pavement strewn with the confetti of aftermath, the leaves come. Patient, plodding, a green skin growing over whatever winter did to us, a return to the strange idea of continuous living despite the mess of us, the hurt, the empty. Fine then, I'll take it, the tree seems to say, a slick new leaf unfurling like a fist to an open palm. I'll take it all. With our hands and hands unfurling, not from fists, but open palms, we have to take today, another day in which we will not give up on our dreams. May we be the ones to dream and to make it so.